And we are live. Welcome to the premiere episode, I guess we could say. I don't really know. We don't got a name yet, but we're going to work on it. Everything is a process. And I am joined by my lovely co-host, Sean. How you doing today, Sean?
I'm batting my eyelashes at the compliment.
Thank you.
How are you?
I'm pretty good. You're going to make me hot if you keep speaking that way to me. So, how has your week been?
it's a week, man.
It's a week.
It's been super fabulous at work if it's opposite day.
Okay, I'll take that. That's an appropriate answer. That works for me. I've been good. I've seen a couple movies recently. Like we talked a little bit off the podcast. I went to go see, I rented Assassin's Creed from Redbox. It was good. I liked it. As far as video game movies go, and that standard is not a very high one, it was a decent movie. I can't really say there's some cheesy moments. I liked what's his name, Michael Fassbender as the main character. I think he did a very good job. He is a good actor. I can't really say that. I haven't really seen much else of what he's in, but I think he's pretty good.
It's a mixed bag, trust me.
Okay, I'll take that. We had a little bit of problems before we started, but we're here and we're getting this on the road. We're good. Like I said, my week's been good, just doing school and work, keeping that on that grind. And I guess we could talk a little bit. We recently started playing it's been out for a while, but a recently released MMO in the broadest of terms, a game that we recently downloaded called Skyforge. A fun game. I enjoy it. I like the combat. I definitely recommend it to any of you out there listening that if you have some space on your console, your PS4, I don't know about Xbox One, but PS4, we definitely know what's on there. It's been on PC for quite some time, and it's definitely a good, get some good time out of it, some enjoyment, if you got some friends you want to play with, and there's no pay that you have to, you don't have to shell out any money from your wallets to get to that. So, yeah, I definitely enjoy it. What do you feel about it? How you think?
I think it's a one player. It feels like a game that was designed around a challenge so that multiple people can do it. There's a little bit of something for everyone. Nothing's perfect, but I think it's fun. And since it doesn't cost anything and you can jump in, and it's got a little bit more depth than Warframe, another free to play, not quite MMO-ish kind of thing. But it's not as polished, I think, at least in terms of the combat and things of that nature. It's relatively simple, which means it's easy to jump into. So, I mean, it's a mixed bag. I don't think anybody's going to love it, but I think a lot of people will either like it or find it passable enough to, you know, devote some time to. It still seems aren't super plush when they're very young.
Yeah. Yeah, speaking about Warframe, it's weird. Like, there's a lot of these free games, and we have obviously Warframe, which we just mentioned a bit, and with like being a little bit of a spoiler alert, but I guess not too many people care. But being like these like super kids controlling these metal puppets that have different abilities and stuff like that, and then we have also Skyforge, when you're like gods and stuff. How do you feel about the presentation of Skyforge, I'd say, as a whole? I've heard from a lot of people that it's widely considered a AAA experience in the way from presentation to music. The graphics are pretty good. It is a bit buggy at times, and we've run into a couple of those. But also coming through as just playing through the game, cutscenes. There are cutscenes, to say. A lot of people might not have experienced this game before, but what do you feel about the presentation of the game?
I think it's got a lot of polish. outside of the voice syncing issues and the randomly spinning Exorcist head.
Oh, yeah.
The colors are nice. I like the use of the palette. There's a lot of pastels and soft tones, and they're trying diligently to use a lighting system that actually works. And most MMOs use that static kind of lighting. So I think that they're really trying. You know, you can see the effort is there. I'm not sure how deep that's going to go. Like I said, that's why I brought you guys into it. I enjoy it, but I can enjoy it and still see it's got a long ways to go before it gets where it wants to be. Kind of like, you know, really enjoying a movie, but seeing how the movie desperately needed polish. This has polish in a lot of areas, but it still has squeaky joints. It's beautiful, you know, but with the voice going off sync and the graphical glitches that frequently occur and occasionally just like getting stuck or falling through the map or so on and so forth, stuff like that shouldn't be as common as it is. But I don't think it really impedes in the way of enjoyment very much.
Yeah, I definitely feel you on that aspect. And coming across that, I do recommend it to anybody. Again, as we've already said, it is a free game. You do not have to worry about trying to get people to shell out money, like we've already said. And I've already put, I can't even say, maybe 15, 20 hours into it. And I'm still looking forward into jumping back in and getting back into it. So moving a little bit forward also is... we're going to go ahead. Oh, jeez. So odd. We're going to go ahead and start talking about news. I think it's already been about, 7 minutes? I'll take that. It's the first episode. It might only be an hour long. But so we're going to start talking about news. We're going to get into some of the things, the happenings that have occurred over the last week before we move on to our main topics, which is Star Wars talk about all the hype surrounding the recent releases of both the Battlefield 2 trailer and the trailer for the movie. We'll get into that as our main topic a bit later into the show. So right now we're going to just talk about a little bit of the things that have been occurring over the last week, obviously staying away from Star Wars. And I have a couple things here I'm going to just present to you, Sean, and you tell me what you think. So Outlast 2 recently had its launch trailer released, which I
said
watched.
Dark with news this week.
One more time?
I said I poured up right there Tuesday.
Give me that one more time, because you cut out.
Yeah, it looks like we're getting a little bit of interference. I look forward to talking about the news. I haven't been able to keep up with it as much as I'd like to this week.
Oh, yeah. There is a, to be frank, a shitload. But did you get a chance to play the first Outlast? I don't know how much of a fan you are of horror games, but were you able to dive into that at any time when it originally came out?
Oh, I loved Outlast. I played, let's paraphrase this, or I should say preface this by saying there's a lot I don't remember. But I played through both segments of it. I watched PewDiePie play it. I watched, I think it was Markiplier play it. It was entertaining enough to watch two or three Let's Players play it. And I'm not going to lie to you, there was enough penises in there for like the 8-year-old in me to have a field day. With immature jokes.
Yeah, I feel you. So. It definitely puts you off when you're playing through this intense, scary experience and you run into two dudes with their dicks flopping around and you're just like, well then, this is where I'm at, this is what I'm in, and I gotta deal with that.
Yeah. Well, having naked killers chase you around, it actually took some of the sting out. Because it was just so awkwardly strange. But I liked the premise, you know? It took that whole indie horror thing where you're running and you don't have weapons and then giving you resource management and then kind of having to be ingenious as to how to avoid trouble. And you never felt like you weren't doing anything. Like some of those indie horror games on Steam and whatnot, you pick up for a couple of bucks while you're running or trying to avoid them. It's it's kind of a one note experience, and Outlast really felt fully fleshed. So I liked it.
Yeah, I feel you too. I definitely enjoyed it. It was one of the, I'd say one of my, I did play quite a bit of Amnesia when that first came out. Although I did not have, I did not have a PC. I remember, I would go over to my grandmother's house, and for some reason she had a beefier rig than we did. And every once in a while, when we go over for dinner or whatever she invited us over for, right after dinner, I'd head into her the computer room, just hide away from family and play whatever I did when I was younger. It most likely be, usually it was Minecraft, because I was that kid that played Minecraft. I wasn't like a normie though, you know. It wasn't just vanilla Minecraft. I had like those mod packs, which are pretty extensive. Like the one thing that is crazy, although Minecraft is a great example of both ends of the spectrum, is that the community both, I think, provided a lot for that game and destroyed that game at the same time. Not that it's doing bad in any way, shape, or form, but that the fact that it's looked down on, that, I could say looked down on by a lot of people because of just the people that have come to flock around it, being little kids and stuff like that. And like, you see all these things on YouTube, like these cringe compilations at MineCon of these kids asking like just completely stupid questions. Everyone's there is like, just, oh God, it makes you feel for the next generation. We have people paying to go to these conventions, and you see children between the ages of 8 and 14 shotgunning dabs and stuff to the camera and asking these dumb questions. But I also, on the other side of that, like I was saying, the modding support for that community was insane. All the stuff that you could come across, even things that made the game look super realistic, which I never understood because you're still working on a voxel platform, but you had everything looking really pretty, so it just felt out of place. Especially if you were playing multiplayer, you looked at another character and you're like, well, that's still a blocky man over there, but I got like super realistic looking water down the road. And I played, I don't remember what the pack was, I think it was Tekkit. When I was young, I used to watch a lot of the Yogscast, and when they did their thing, and when they were doing a lot of Minecraft, I was really in on that. And I loved, I think it was Lewis, and what was the other man's name? The heavier set gentleman. Do you remember?
That I can't help you with. I came into Yogscast after they imploded with the failure that that Minecraft type game they wanted to build. So I they were on the downside after I came in. I think they still do that, but they moved on to some other projects and such. So I didn't get to catch them at the height.
Oh, okay. I don't remember. It was Lewis and something, but he was like the dude that was always like, man, if any of you out there was like this when you were younger, I'm sure this is a nostalgia flashback, but he was always like the Jaffa Cakes and all that stuff, and they did a bunch of Minecraft stuff, but they usually played with, it was called the Tekkit Pack, and it was like a mix of all these different mods that industrialized Minecraft, so you could get like things that would grind down resources, and you could like manage like this little factory that you made out of shit that you mined from the environment. And I loved that. Every day I'd go, I'd work on building up my factories, getting everything automated so I could like throw a coal into like a machine, have it be processed to death, and then eventually turn it into something that it would be super useful and just maximize the output. I loved that as a kid. And every time I could not run it at home. Believe me, I tried. We've never had a decent desktop in this house. It just never was the case. Oh, Jesus, I smacked the shit out of my pop filter. But just going over there and enjoying that, a lot of it was also Amnesia, and that game scared the shit out of me when I was a kid. It's also mods for that as well. But that was like my first, I don't know how we got so off topic, but that was like my first experience when it came to horror games, and then Outlast definitely improved upon that. I really enjoyed Outlast as a whole. I liked although it started to brood the hate inside me,
just so you know, you are one of, I don't know, 400,000 people where like Amnesia was the tipping stone of like the love yet the beginning of the hate.
Yeah,
it's so funny that you say that.
Because it was a good game. It was a well-made game, and it was a fun game, and it was a scary game. And obviously everyone knows about it if you've been anywhere on YouTube for the past 5-10 years, because of PewDiePie making it crazy popular, and then him being one of the largest YouTubers on YouTube currently. It's just...
it making him crazy popular.
Yeah, it's craziness. And then I had, like I was saying, but like, it started... I got near the end of the game, and I'm thinking, I'm like, why is my character doing this? Like, I understand he's trapped, but like, why can I not fight these things? And I hate that feeling. And the same thing existed throughout Outlast, and I know it's supposed to build tension, and it makes it difficult in a way, but I just never was a big fan of that, and that's why I'm such a huge fan of the most recent Resident Evil, although I consider it maybe like a tenth of a horror game, because the first hour is scary and the rest of it's just you're just enjoying yourself and killing the bakers and going ham. But
still, the whole first person thing just puts me off. Like, it looks good and it looks like I'm going to enjoy it, but it doesn't look like a Resident Evil game. It doesn't have the feel, it doesn't have the ambiance. It feels like a AAA variation on the standard indie horror theme that you find on Steam. I don't feel like they did anything different, and that's from watching you and a handful of others play through it. I haven't played through it personally, so let's put that on the table. And I think it's wonderful. I think it's a really good project. I think it's a good game, but in no way, shape, or form does it feel like a Resident Evil game, and that's what really makes me sad. I see them put the conventions in there, you know, like paying love to the previous series, like Final Fantasy 15 attempted to do to the rest of the Final Fantasy franchise. But just like 15 didn't really feel so much like a Final Fantasy game as it did a spinoff, this is kind of like the same thing. And I think we're going to continue to see a trend of that with people reboot or take a game franchise in a new direction, whether it's a reboot or a remake or just the next installment happens to be vastly different. I think we're going to see that as they attempt to try and tap into whatever happens to be the big sell at the moment, which, you know, is great to bring in new audiences, but a part of me gets very sad at the thought of that, because I look forward to continuing the experience, and that's not the way it works. And just how life is, I guess. But it doesn't feel like Resident Evil to me. It feels like somebody downloaded a really badass new property off of Steam, or just made a badass new kind of game, you know?
Yeah, I understand where you're coming from, and I could see where, especially not, like, I understand, and I could see it from, like, someone that hasn't played it. There are things that are in the game that make it feel more like Resident Evil game as you play it. But I could definitely see that as a thought from someone seeing it from maybe like dabbling in it, kind of just seeing what it's like. I could definitely see why it wouldn't feel like a Resident Evil horror game. What were we talking about before? We're talking about Outlast, right? I'm just trying to think. It was Outlast that started this. Yeah, but I could definitely see where Resident Evil, and again, a lot of things, and since it was so popular, and with a lot of these remakes and remasters, or reboots is the better word to say for that, with a lot of these reboots and things that all these companies are trying to do to keep themselves, I'd say, or not even keep relevant. Themselves, but try and like bring a relevance back to these certain properties, because they've been successful because of what they've been doing. And with Resident Evil, you could see a lot of it kind of riding on the coattails of what PT did to the to us as a whole in this as a gaming populace, of how big of a craziness that brought about, of these people playing PT, getting their pants scared off and wanting something more, but having that taken away from them. So I think a lot of people will be super willing to defend the game for what it's done as well, because it's like that PT that they never received, kind of. Although it's not as, I wouldn't say it's as scary as PT, and it doesn't fall the same lines, obviously. But
no,
yeah, and
it's
for
not a criticism, you know, yeah. I'm not trying to say that I criticize it. I think it looks very good. I tell you, I'm fairly certain it'll roll out the same way because I'm going into it expecting a Resident Evil feel, and instead I'm getting something vastly different. That's not a criticism so much. I know it may sound like that because I think they're both excellent. It's usually successful, very fun to play game. I just don't feel like I'm playing Final Fantasy. I feel like I'm playing something else with like a Final Fantasy patch on it.
Yeah, yeah.
The characters, things of that nature, you know?
Go ahead. You hear me?
Yeah, no, I got you. But I think that Resident Evil is really, really good. I don't agree with you that they're trying to capitalize on PT because it's such a vastly different kind of experience. PT puts you in that same helpless shoes that Outlast does and Amnesia does. You really can't fight back in that game. You can push her off. You can, you know, kind of try and get away. But for PT, I think everything in PT was the pacing and the ambiance and then the set pieces and just how they incorporated classic horror filmmaking and then blending that classic horror filmmaking in with Japanese horror pacing. If you've watched a lot of Japanese or even Korean or Chinese horror movies, there are conventions that were blended in with some traditional, and I mean old school, horror pacing ideas from American horror. It was more like they were trying to make an interactive film than they were trying to make a game, almost.
Yeah, I could.
The success was because they went back to their roots. They didn't try mechanics, you know, they weren't trying gimmicks. What they were trying to do was legitimately scare you.
Yeah.
You know? And I think that when your focus isn't right, that's why the first Silent Hill worked so well. That's why the first, you know, two Resident Evils worked so well. The Fatal Frame game is big on details, and it just happens at just the right spot and just the right way that you feel like you are uncovering and bringing things to the forefront. But the closer you get, the more dangerous it gets.
Yeah,
and it just spins into a nightmare, and I think that's just the really unfortunately the direction it went makes me sad. But I still have it on the PlayStation. I refuse to delete it. As long as it's there, I have access to it. I still go back and play it, even though I know it's going to happen, just because it's really fun to see how they put everything together.
Yeah. All right.
But I digress. I'm sorry. Please continue.
Yeah. No, it's no problem. We're going to have to edit the fuck out of this anyway, because every once in a while you'll cut out, and I'm not...
Same for you.
Yeah.
That blue-green, red-orange kind of thing going on, and our connection frequently will flip into the orange and red direction, which is when you start to dip out, or yeah. Me.
we'll definitely... Again,
we'll work on this.
We'll work on it. I think probably in the future, I'm going to hardwire my computer, and then you need to find a way to do yours as well, and that'd probably fix everything a lot.
That does give me an idea. I keep talking.
All right. So, moving forward again, we're keeping up with the news. There's been a decent amount of things coming out recently over the last week. We had the reveal for the new Call of Duty being done by Sledgehammer, which is going to be set in World War II, going back to the World at War days. I don't know how I feel about it. What about you, Sean? What do you think about going back to World War II after that's already been a successful campaign?
Honestly, I am. I washed my hands of several franchises that I trusted. I washed my hands of Call of Duty. I've washed my hands of Assassin's Creed. They're going to come out with some really great games, and it's going to happen. But I am done with giving them a chance. I like the idea. I think World War II has something about it, a certain mystique that continues to draw people back to it, and it's got a certain filmic quality But I agreed with Modern Warfare when they said it's time to move on. I think it's good to try and do, if you're stuck on doing realistic wars, that's cool, because the whole sci-fi thing, apparently the world just rebelled against that, and to me that was probably one of the freshest ideas they tried, but in the end it was just Modern Warfare and Zero Gravity, which is, you know, again, them churning out the same game once a year. It was a sports franchise, man. It was like Madden or NCAA or any of those, you know, sports titles. How much freshness can you install into a game when you release one a year? So I don't have a lot of faith in it, and I'm frankly done with it. I look for unique shooters now. That's why I went back and bought those two the ones I mentioned to you every so often, the Russian thing.
Oh, yeah.
That's why I went back and got those two. That's why I go and pick up, like, if they were to put Serious Sam 1 and 2 on the digital market, I'd snatch those up, because that's something different. I mean, a first-person shooter is always going to be a first-person shooter. But every now and then they do something unique with it. You know, you have Mirror's Edge, which flips it on its head, you know, and spins it. And you got Serious Sam, which has a comedy cartoon element into it. Or you have, you know, that Russian one, which follows this whole comic book horror vibe and is really immersive. And those are your first one. It wasn't nearly as exciting as I thought it would be, but it was still its own thing. But yeah. It's lost its identity. It's lost its fingerprint. And I, frankly, will not be giving it any more opportunities. I mean, going back is cool, but you've been there. You've got 100,000 other wars on the planet, and considering you've got to stick with ones that involve firearms, and there's a very, I think there's kind of a limited stock with how much firearm nonsense you can play with the farther back you go. So they're going to have to start doing something different. They did Civil War. You had a handful of different types of weapons. Most of them were, you know, powder and ball rifles. So you're going to be dealing with bayonet combat. You'll be dealing with hand-to-hand, you know, cannons, cavalry stuff, swords. I don't think the Modern Warfare community would adapt to that. The Vietnam thing, they could do that. But, again, your World War II is far enough back, but I don't know if Vietnam is far enough back that you won't have SJWs jumping off the couch or some other kind of problem. I don't know what they could do to save it, man. I mean, you're going to have the same people buying it no matter what, just because they go on for the online aspect, and that's cool because that's the competitive crowd. That's what makes it an esports kind of game. But I don't know about being a flagship franchise. I think that more and more of us are going to become disillusioned and just walk away and find something else that's going to be trying to make itself, give it, you know, unique.
Okay, this is something that's, I find interesting, because I've been a big fan of the series for a long time. But recently they have released more details and images for the, you know, From Software, who does Dark Souls and the Bloodborne series. They have released new images and details about their new IP that they're working on, because officially, for now, Dark Souls is over as a series. After the most recent DLC from 3, they have stopped. I don't know how long it will be like that, but as it stands currently, it's been discontinued. So they just recently released details for their new game coming out, and it's called Code Vein, and it is a vampire RPG.
And oh, what, there.
One more time?
All you had to do was say vampire, and I was sold.
It is a vampire RPG that will be launching for 2018 on consoles. This is by Eddie Mackick of GameSpot, and he says, following a report from last week, Bandai Namco today officially announced Code Vein, a vampire game of sorts where you feast on the blood of enemies in a massive interconnected world. The third-person action RPG is scheduled to launch on major home consoles in 2018. There is no word about a PC version currently. Bandai Namco also released the official synopsis for Code Vein. You play as a revenant in a world full of vicious enemies and monstrous bosses. In the not-too-distant future, a mysterious disaster has brought collapse to the world, as we know it. Oh, to the world as we know it. Towering skyscrapers, once symbols of prosperity, are now lifeless graves of humanity's past pierced by the thorns of judgment. At the center of the destruction lies a hidden society of revenants called Vayne. The final stronghold is where the remaining few fight to survive, blessed with gifts of power in exchange for their memories and a thirst for blood. Give in to the bloodlust fully and risk becoming one of the lost, fiendish ghouls devoid of any remaining humanity. Oh, God.
Sounds like a metaphor. It sounds like a metaphor for the Sonic franchise.
Yeah, it sounds interesting. But, actually, from what this article says, it says that the game is being developed by Bandai Namco Studios, which isn't the... It's not the developers that did Dark Souls, but they're like they're the publishers of Dark Souls. So this isn't the next Dark Souls game. It looks very anime-esque from what I've seen from pictures. It's got like the 3D models and stuff and the way they look. And it sounds interesting. It says players can change their form to increase their strength, weaken enemies, and utilize new weapon abilities with overpowered attacks. Utilizing the vast array of weaponry along with each character's gift, players can adapt and strategize to a variety of battle conditions that suit their playstyles. The VP of marketing, Eric Hartness, said in the statement that Code Vayne will offer a fresh anime aesthetic and blood-curdling gameplay twists. And as I said, it's being developed by Bandai Namco. So, that's interesting. I mean, out of anyone that would do a game like this, it'd be Bandai Namco. Something that's anime-esque, because that's what they're all about. But, I don't know. It sounds cool. I mean, it sounds like there's a lot of variation on how you play the game. I don't know, it's not from software, which I had mistaken, but hearing about it, it kind of interests me, and again, no PC release, but from what it sounds like it'd be something I'd be at least looking forward to hearing more about it in the coming months as we get closer to release date. What do you think?
I don't think there's enough of a couple of genres of games out there, vampires and cyberpunk games being two of them. So they're going to bring something out. Honestly, I would prefer them go kind of a darker route with it, do something kind of like along the lines of the computer masquerade games, Vampire the Masquerade games that came out in the late 90s, early 2000s, you know, give it a kind of a goth punk edge. You know, it's always raining, it's always dark, everyone's wearing leather, there's intrigue, you know. I'd like to see more of that, but even if they go an anime spin on things, it still sounds like it could be fun, as long as they don't make it as long as they're not trying, I don't know, to make another of something else. Like, I'm really tired of seeing rehashes. That's not to say that you can't incorporate popular elements from another game, but I'd like to see somebody again. I'm starting to notice games are adopting identities rather than creating their own. I'd like to see this become its own thing. It sounds interesting, but I don't want to see this as another Dark Souls or this as another, you know, another title. I'd like to see it stand on its own, because the descriptory terms that they put in there are vague enough that this could go any direction.
Yeah.
And I definitely don't want it to be another one of those, like, goodness, what was that one where you run around defeating vampire clothes?
What? One more time?
Oh, God. Akiba Strip.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I remember. They made an anime off that show, or that game. It was just as bad. I can guarantee you that it's just like something that, like, you wouldn't want to show to your friends, because you'd know they'd label you as that type of person. It's like, oh, you're that guy, or like, oh, this is that. It's like, gives such a bad name to the industry in general. Just the way it is. Obviously, like, the synopsis is you fight these vampires that live in broad daylight. And for some reason, they're being protected by their clothes, but they're not wearing like anything that would be fully covering their body. Like, their head's getting hit by the sun.
Yeah,
I don't understand. And then the moment they start stripping clothes off of them, they burst into flames. It's so dumb, and it just, again, it does not shine a good light on the industry as a whole for anime. And yeah, but it from what I've seen, it looks like it's more of a serious title. I was going to say, Bandai, I don't think Bandai Namco would be that type of publisher, but I don't remember if they did Senran Kagura or not, and I hope they didn't, or like if they published it or not. And if that's the case.
Xseed did Kagura.
Okay.
Xseed, that was Xseed.
Okay, I was going to say, if that's the case, we've lost the war already, boys. So that's all I got to say there. Also, we also have a... This is also something that happened recently. I actually saw the ad.
Special to publish it over here.
Yeah, I actually saw the ad for this on YouTube while I was watching some videos earlier. And although we haven't played enough of it, we have done a little bit of it, but GTA 5 Online, as they do, has released a new... Or they're working on a new expansion to their online thing, another free expansion. And it is to revive classic top-down camera for racing. So it's more of like an arena-style racing where you go around a track, you get weapons as you go, Mario Kart style, but it's a top-down. And it looks interesting. I mean, I still don't... Like, they straight up, I've heard before that they straight up told those guys, like, they've taken so many people off the team working on GTA Online, they told them to stop making content because they need to work on the next GTA, but they just keep pumping shit out, and it's all free. I can't imagine. And every time you look, if you look on the store for, like, most popular of the month, you still see GTA 5 up there. They are still selling shitloads of copies of that game, and it just baffles me how much money they're making off of GTA. It is insane.
I would let it ride. I honestly would let it ride. If I was Rockstar, or is it Rockstar? Rockstar Games, right?
Yeah, it's Rockstar.
If I was Rockstar, I would let that shit ride for a while. I would not try and push them off. I would slowly work on the sixth one. And I really, because they did something hugely, hugely, to me, revolutionary. Now, granted, mind, I was done with GTA. I think they never touched the one player. Campaign of GTA 5 because I know exactly what to expect. You know, I know the heists are kind of fun, but outside of that, like, it's more of the same. And if you love that kind of thing, then that's your bag. For me, I'll you know, get in trouble with the cops, run away, and then quit the game. You know, that's I'll see how long I can escape and get bored. But the online aspect is so fun. It's a free MMA, MMO. You know, you have this massively multiplayer online game. Well, it's maybe not so massive. There's a limit to how many players on each map server or server map, but there's so much that you can do. You can do biker, and there's so much content, and they haven't charged anyone for any of it. You know, and you can earn all of it. You don't have to buy the online credits. Like, you can fully experience the online game and everything it has to offer just by playing it a lot with your friends. And even the other free-to-play MMOs that are out there, Skyforge, Neverwinter, was that other one that we were doing recently? I can't even remember the name of it right now. But all of those free-to-play MMOs, they take 400 times longer to get the same level of thorough experience out of it. So Rockstar has tons of money off of this, but they've also been spending a lot appreciating their fan base and giving them a fully fleshed-out experience from jump, without asking for anything in return. And they continue to put stuff out there. So even though I'm not the biggest Grand Theft Auto fan anymore, I appreciate it as a medium and as like a commentary. Like, I will continue to buy the games as long as there's an online element to it because of how much appreciation they've shown us. They just really have knocked it out of the park. I don't give two fucks about the top-down thing. I'm so glad they left that behind. I hated the original Grand Theft Auto games. But the fact that they continue to put stuff out there for free, dude, I would walk up and give every single one of their staff a hug and a kiss.
Yeah.
Like, they really have set the bar high for other developers.
Yeah, it's definitely, I'd say a good thing. And they've seen a lot of success off of it. And that reminds me also, I had heard that for the new Battlefront, which we'll also talk about a bit later as well when we start our main topic. The new Battlefront event is the new Battlefront game that they've said that they will not be including a season pass. So the way it sounds and the way that they've kind of put it in that light is that it might go the route of Titanfall or DLC or GTA 5 and the fact that they might be throwing out maybe free maps. I'm sure they're going to find some other way to bridge the gap in making that money. I'm sure they'll have some kind of like cosmetic, maybe a loot box system, kind of like that everything's adapting now with the new Call of Duties and Overwatch especially. They might adapt something like that that will invite, like, provide some kind of cosmetics. They said that, in all honesty, that as bad as the first one burned me, from what I've seen, I'm kind of excited. It looks like they've learned their lessons for the second one, and I can't say I'm the biggest fan of Star Wars, but I do like the world that it exists in, and I find it so cool that they have it set up where you could play through all the Star Wars eras and do all these different battles, and it sounds really cool. But again, we're gonna save that for when we start the main topic, which should be pretty soon.
Yeah.
So
I do want to make a comment. I didn't get a chance to say this because you kind of, and I know you you're gonna hate me for this, but you made a mention a while ago about developers taking properties and trying to make them relevant again, right? Like if they've somehow lost relevance over time. I think that developers are panicking. There's a lot of really scary things happening in the video game industry, even if as it grows. You're having parts of it tank while other parts of it are still succeeding, and there's a lot of uncertainty as to where things are going. And as companies are struggling to stay afloat and to stay as profitable as they used to be before cell phones came along and mucked up the whole bag, smartphones. And there are a lot of properties that they've decided to just completely wash it out and start it over, not because it wasn't relevant anymore, but because they were afraid of current generation gamers not enjoying the same concept that the generation before. For instance, Kyle, you and I are from two different gaming generations, you know?
Yeah.
Like, age has never been an issue ever in any of our conversations whatsoever, and we're both on the same wavelength with a lot of stuff, even if it's not, even we're on different sides of the fence. But when you take an iconic series like, for instance, Devil May Cry, or even something that's been running longer like Castlevania, those don't need to be completely washed out and rebuilt from the ground up. People to this day, newer gamers to this day, enjoy each iteration of that series, even if you don't go back to the 8-bits. If you go into the 16-bit or 32-bit era, you have people that still love the way those games are. They love the concepts of those games, but yet you had Konami completely rehash and reboot Castlevania as a God of War clone. And I mean, whereas it was a fun game-ish to play, it was by no means on par with its previous entries. I mean, they took it and made it into something completely different, and that just didn't fly with Castlevania fans anywhere, and it definitely didn't pick up new fans. You look at the last Devil May Cry entry, where they completely, I mean, Dante, the white-haired, brash hero, who very much would appeal to gamers of, what is it, Generation Y, I guess? I don't even fucking know what term they're using.
Neither.
But
that falls.
But the millennials, right? Dante's attitude, the whole flippant, like, just badass, like, I'll do what I want because I can fucking do that. The style, the substance of the Devil May Cry series is perfect for now. It was ahead of its time for that. And they took a hero and a mythos. They spent all this time building up, took a few years off to build the next game, and then when the next game came out, they completely flushed everything. Made a new character, a new hero, redesigned the entire concept, and it tanked. And now there's no telling you what is going to happen with the Devil May Cry franchise. I think that developers are panicking. I think that they're afraid that things aren't going to sell. Because if you look at the numbers for Devil May Cry 1 for the first one through the fourth one, the numbers were there. Even in weak installments like the second one, which was more style over substance, same as Halo 2, it sold like hotcakes. Everybody bought it. Hack PlayStation Network just because they could. and it's still selling for a decent price. They didn't have to do that, but the series was still relevant. The storyline was still relevant. They dumped it and started over like they did with Spider-Man, and in reality, they didn't have to do that. So I think with Resident Evil, it had to, because they made a couple of missteps. The last legit Resident Evil title was 4. 5, while good, definitely went in a direction that wasn't exactly perfect for Resident Evil, but they could have, with a little bit of subtle tweaks, continued going with that and made it work. It just transitioned from straight-up survival horror to action horror. That's fine. That's okay. You know? But when 6 came out and they tried to do a little bit of each, people didn't really latch onto that. They didn't understand. Now, content-wise, you got a shitload of content in 6, and I, for one, actually enjoyed 2/3 of it. And the other third I enjoyed for the story, but the gameplay with Red. But the running part with Wesker's kid and Leon's part, which was old-school Resident Evil, that was good. And if they had found a balancing point for that, I think they would have been fine. But they just tried too hard to do one thing and then tried too hard to do another thing. And by the time the Revelations games came out, people had given up. They didn't understand what 6 was trying to do. They didn't understand the transition from 4 to 5. They didn't quite grasp onto everything, even though the money was still pouring in, even though the franchises were still successful, the press wasn't. And so that's why you ended up with the one you've got now. But it sounds to me like that particular departure wasn't a bad idea, because it sold so well and people have enjoyed the Resident Evil twist as much as they have. You know, all they've done is change the style in which they display the horror. Okay, we'll adapt, you know. But with the Devil May Cry reboot, with some of these other reboots that we've got coming out, the way we've seen the industry going, I really just wanted to take the moment, the long-winded waste of the time moment, sorry about that, to say that I think the developers need to calm down for a moment, cool their tits, and think, what is it about this series that people love? Why do they continue to come back and embrace it and wear the t-shirts and the belt buckles and the posters and talk about it in school and talk about it at work and draw pictures of it and put up wallpapers of it? Why do people still say, but enough talk, you know, have at you? Or why do people still say, what is a man, a miserable pile of secrets? You know, why is this so iconic? Because people love Castlevania for what it is. And that reboot was not that. You know, that Devil May Cry reboot was not why people love Devil May Cry. People come back to Devil May Cry for Dante. They come back for combos and stylish enemies and epic set pieces and gorgeous environments. This is why people come back to things. But when you reinvent something as an entirely different game, they're not coming back to that universe, are they? They're not coming back to that game. I think that some games, they change every time they release a game. They reinvent things. Square's often done this. No Final Fantasy game is the same. Especially from 7 on, they just made vast changes from installment to installment. I think that's a good way to go. It's not always going to be popular, but as long as you're keeping true to your core, you can change. I mean, as long as your foundation stays familiar, everything else about the building can be different. And I don't want developers to forget that, because I think they're trying so desperate to stay relevant and to get a new audience that they're forgetting the reason why they got an audience in the first place. That draw doesn't change from generation to generation. It doesn't change from sales audience to sales audience. The gamers are looking for the same thing regardless of what decade they were born in.
I feel you. I understand where you're coming from. Again, we're gonna push this along, and we got one more article before we move over to our main topic, and that is the gold lineup for Xbox One and Xbox 360 for May of 2017, which is in a couple. Today's the 22nd. We got about a week, and we'll be there. We have Guyana Sisters, Twisted Dreams, the Director's Cut. Lara Croft in the Temple of Osiris. That's the game. And then on the 360, we have Star Wars The Force Unleashed 2, which I like the first one a bit more, but I do like that series of games. I find that series of games very enjoyable, although thanks to Disney, they're no longer canon. Go fuck yourself, Disney. And we also have Lego Star Wars The Complete Saga. So for all you listening that may own an Xbox 360 or Xbox One, those are your games for May. And we also, if you still have time, for April, which also has Rise, Son of Rome, and The Walking Dead Season 2. So you guys have some time to go pick those up, get those free games. Even if you don't download them, just add them to your library. They're connected to your account. And then at any time, I don't know how it works with Xbox, but I'm assuming if you have gold, you could download them at any point and you could play them. Just add them to your backlog, get that going. Nothing's better than free games.
It's only Season 2. I don't know why they do that.
No clue. After all that wonderful talk, we are going to move on to our main topic, which is the Star Wars hype over the last, it's been a bit more than a week, but over the last time, we've had a lot of people getting super excited over Star Wars. We had two really important trailers that dropped recently. We also had a Star Wars event in, I think it was Orlando, where these trailers were shown off. I had a friend that I tried to get on the podcast, but he did not come, and he actually went. He got to see.
It's not done until Sunday, right?
What happened?
I think it's still. I think it goes on for the full week.
It might be still going on. I'm not entirely sure, but he went and he got to. He actually got to see Mark Hamill and enjoy that. He looked around and got to talk to some people. So, I would have liked him to join, but he did not. So we lose out on that experience, and you guys can blame him because he. I'll leave it at that. So, continuing with the Star Wars hype. First of all, but we're going to talk about the slightly less important, although still important thing, and that was the trailer drop for Battlefront 2. Now, a lot of people have a bad taste in their mouth when I utter the word Battlefront, at least in the recent time, because we've had... first of all, the first Battlefront was at first accepted, and... But eventually, a lot of people realized how shallow that game was in its entirety. The multiplayer, as being fun and being a cool way to experience the sandbox of Star Wars Battle, it was. I do not think that it was fully fleshed out. There was not anything to really keep you playing for more than a day. You kind of just you play for a bit, and then if you had friends, you kind of elongated that way. But besides that, it really wasn't. Anything that you'd be wanting to come back for, because there wasn't really anything to build up to. You're just getting levels. You're not really progressing at all. I mean, they had the card system, but still then, it was not fleshed out. And a lot of people came across that as a issue, and they saw that. But from what it looks like and what I've heard, it seems like they've taken that to heed, and they are working on making this a better experience overall for the Battlefront fans. And the one thing I got to say about the first Battlefront is that was a pretty game. And that game ran at 60 frames.
Yeah,
DICE always does such an excellent job at making these beautiful open maps and that have all this mayhem going on and still somehow keeping that at 60 frames on console. I have no idea how they manage that. And that is just a constant reminder of how no developer has any excuse when it comes to building something for a platform, because all it takes is some workaround here or another to make that game run at least stably. If you're going to have it 30, fine by me. Keep it stable, please. I don't want my frames fluctuating. That's the worst thing you can do. So again, talking about that, have you seen the trailer, Sean? Have you seen what they're going with the story in this one?
I saw the trailer. I wasn't too thrilled about Kylo Ren being in it, but outside of that, I enjoyed it. It looks gorgeous. It doesn't really tell us how the gameplay is going to be, and as long as Disney's not forcing DICE to create a casual friendly game, you know, I think that DICE will do what they've always done, because the first Star Wars Battlefronts back during the PS2 Xbox era, both of those were really good. I personally liked the first one a little bit better. I think it was balanced a little bit better, but the second one had more options and it had the heroes, which would one hit kill you. which uh, I I like those games. I think they're fun. They had good maps. They had a lot of potential. That last one, they had that dumbed down card system. They made it casual friendly, so anyone could jump in and play, which is good. But I think they sacrificed depth to do so. So we ended up with something that was really pretty, with some really amazing set pieces, but with, in actuality, very little strategy or depth involved.
Yeah, I definitely feel you. And again, the one thing I want to say is with these games, although it's hard to tell, especially with DICE, the way they do their trailers is they like to not show off a lot. It's more of like these epic set piece things going on. They always say it's in their game engine and all that's nice and dandy, so you can tell that it's pretty. But you never tell how everything's going to turn out and when it comes to that. So the best thing I can say, and I am the worst offender at this, is to not pre-order your games. For everyone listening out there, if you find something you do not like about something, vote with your wallet. If you do not like something that they did with this game, don't pre-order it. Don't fall for the hype train. And I guess the biggest recent example we have of that is what happened with what was it called? No Man's Sky. And how everyone fell for that hype train, including me, although I got it digitally on day one. And for what that game was, in all honesty, I'm not going to say that it was not hyped to death, because that's exactly what happened, and that's why everyone's so pissed off. Although I do not believe that... what's the name of the developer? Shit, what's his name?
I was about to say it until you asked me, and then I immediately forgot.
Oh, that works. Him. I'm sure someone knows his name, but him.
I've got his face in my...
That shit-eating grin he likes to throw out. But I never felt like the death threats were appropriate. I understand he lied to you, but people lie to you every day, folks. There's no need to be threatening people with death. And again, I understand it was... I could understand maybe like lawsuits going out, but death threats are not appropriate. Again, we represent a community. So every... And the way communities work is every bad pupil shines, and that's how prejudice is born. So I'm getting all philosophical and shit. But again, vote with your wallet, everyone. If you come across something that you find that you might not feel would be something you'd enjoy, or you're feeling sketchy about a certain purchase, just don't do it. Wait for reviews. See what other people are seeing. And with the way the internet is today, you could go anywhere and find a gameplay of any game. Just look at it, see what you see, see if you like what you see, and then go ahead and buy it. Just take your time. I feel like, although again, I am the worst offender when it comes to this, but I do not like the whole pre-order system. I don't think that we should be investing. Oh Jesus, that we should be investing. Money and time with like so far away from initial release dates. Like you could pre-order games before they even go gold, and then they have to literally refund your money back depending on what service you use. So it's just crazy, and the way it's become, it's insane. But again, coming back to Star Wars, let's go back. So we talked a little bit about the reveal trailer for Battlefront 2 and a little bit about Battlefront 1, but what do you think about the way they're going with the story from Battlefront 2? It being you're an elite squadron that's part of the Empire, and you literally watch the Death Star explode. What are you thinking about what they can take that? Obviously, it being a new story, it's something that we've never seen before. What do you think they can take with that, and how do you think it will affect maybe if we get like a spin-off movie, if Disney will consider it part of the actual universe? I'm assuming they will, because the game's actually coming out. And what do you think we're going with that? I think it's, in my opinion, I think it sounds cool. I like the idea of seeing it from the other side. I like the idea of it not being a story about a Jedi, although there are Jedis. Although I know everyone's all about the Skywalker family and learning about all that and learning about Jedis and lightsaber battles and force, but I've always been super fascinated with the whole military aspect of the Empire and how they took over or attempted to take over the galaxy and stuff like that. So what do you think about the way they're going with the story?
That's going to make it into the game. to be honest. Usually when they advertise stuff, we lose like 2/3 of it. But I think, I don't know, man. I'm a weird can of worms to open when it comes to Star Wars, because I'm super passionate about Star Wars. But in the same note, I've given up my ownership of Star Wars. I mean, they're going to do what they're going to do. Like, I really liked Rogue One, and I liked how Rogue One worked, because it played more like the expanded universe material. It played more like some of the comic books and some of the video games, where it showed a part of the universe that was outside of the epic story, outside of the romance, outside of the fantasy. Here you've got a military movie with Star Wars trappings. You know, you've got a special ops squad, and everybody, well, I mean, spoilers, right? But everybody,
yeah,
kind of meets their end, so to speak.
Yeah.
And you get to see what happens.
That might be a capital offense you have on your hands there.
Fuck it, man. If they haven't seen it within the first few months, it's their own problem. The point is I like the idea of taking the story away from the canon characters and putting it in the hands of a no face. You know, if you look back at some of these games like Dark Forces or some of the earlier like that, you've got invented characters that are part of the canon universe or the then canon universe before Disney came along and hit the almighty reset button and screwed all the good stuff up relating to those good the expanded universe. You had new heroes involved with new plot lines and new stories that impacted the main universe or had already impacted the main universe and you didn't know that, you know, the main storyline. I like that idea. So I think it's genius if they do run with that, to put you in the shoes of a soldier on one side or the other side, who is outside of that beautiful main space opera, but his actions are contributing to it behind the scenes. But I think if they're going to do that with the video game thing, they need to make you feel just as important, even if your name doesn't happen to pop up in the main story. I don't think that they should do what they did with Rogue One and make it so grim. It needs to be a fun, epic adventure. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think there's a lot of potential, but I also think there's a lot of potential to muck it up. So they need to make sure they got some really good writers on there if they're going to have a story mode that legit is going to give you that kind of experience. Because I really look forward to campaigns. That's my favorite part. The multiplayer part is fun with friends, but the depth of the game, I'm looking for a good story that I can be a part of. And that one has me excited. I just don't want them to go dark with it, because Star Wars itself isn't a dark story, even though there's all these shadows and genocide, all this stuff in there. The main focus isn't on the darkness, but it's on the light that shines through. It always has been. So I guess it just depends on the direction it takes.
Yeah. Again, I think it's, thinking back, I think it's going to be cool. Again, it's not something we've seen before. It is a brand new, at least, I mean, not an ideal, but the story itself and whoever we're following are going to be new characters that have been introduced from DICE. But coming from Battlefield 1 and the story in that game, I did enjoy the vignettes that they had in Battlefield 1, the little side stories that are technically like World War 1. But seeing these fights going from different sides that participated in the war, and although none of these were in any way based on true stories, and a lot of them were romanticized, they were still cool to see. You get this nice little story that had just aspects of good storytelling. Although it was hard, I could see it being hard to become invested in the characters, because you know that you're only going to be playing with these people for maybe half an hour. It was cool to see just these like sweeping countrysides, or being in Italy, or seeing attacks in like the no man's zone, and like Oh, I'm thinking it was France. I'm not entirely sure. Might have been. I'm thinking it was France. I'm not entirely sure. But just going through all these different areas, especially how the game opens up in Battlefield 1, the way they do it where you are a soldier, and if you die, it shows you the birth, and you get a name, birth date, and the year they died. And it's just such an impactful start, and you truly see the atrocities of war and what these people had to go through, especially in trench combat, which is one of the for the amount that you gain to the amount of lives lost, it's just one of the worst styles we've ever developed for fighting. But it's I am excited to see what they do, because the storytellers that did Battlefield 1, I think, did a very good job. I think it was fun to go through the campaign, and that's why I decided to... Should I just smack my table? I think that was why I decided to platinum that game and add that to my list. I thought it was really good.
I'm just glad they brought the campaign back, man, because there was no campaign in the first Battlefront.
That was one of the largest complaints of people from the first one, was the fact of that... just complete lack of campaign. You open the game, you play multiplayer, and with the way the multiplayer was fleshed out, which is the fact that it wasn't, it threw a lot of people for a loop, in all honesty, Battlefield 1, let's talk about that, which was most recent release, the same problem persists. I see it often, that's why I don't play it anymore, is that there's nothing to build towards. I mean, you get your rank 10 weapons for maxing out a class, but once you hit that point, including the fact that these rank 10 weapons aren't necessarily strong, which I can understand because you have to balance the game, but you have nothing to work towards. You're playing for the experience, and if that experience isn't something
I'm sorry, I apologize. You mentioned that before. A while ago, one of the reasons it pushed you out. And I was thinking, what if they incorporated a ranking system where you could go into ranked battles, you know, like one side's Germany, one side's France, whatever. And then your rank actually plays a factor. Like if you're lower ranked, you're infantry and you're running out there. But if you're not, you're receiving orders. So the higher up in rank you get, you're doing more than just shooting bad guys or driving tanks. You might be sending a squad out here or regiments out there or people of a certain rank to a certain area to accomplish certain goals. Like, you could play a game where the more advanced you get, it might end up being something along the lines of some of those real-time strategy games where you're looking at a screen of data and you're seeing real-time numbers, and you're sending guys out. I mean, granted, that might not appeal to everybody, but I think if they had a mode like that, it's kind of like those sports management games where you're now taking other players and you're sending them out to accomplish goals, and you're spending part of your time, or all of your time even, just monitoring the battle and shifting forces to different areas. And when the lines break, bring in guys in to hold that line or to close that gap back up or so on and so forth. I thought that would be really cool. And the thing is I don't think it would be that difficult to do.
I think the biggest problem that you would run across with that style of play is, how would you deal with, okay, so you have your commander and you are a grunt. I can understand you can provide incentives, but what alone would make that player want to follow another person they know as a player? You kind of get what I'm saying? Like, with the amount of people...
To be able to tell other players to do things, to pass on. The downside to that is eventually, toward the end of the online's lifespan, you're going to have less and less lower-level players, and everybody's going to be up there. But you could always volunteer to take the role of a grunt or whatever, but as you earn your points, your experience, your rank goes up, and you have the option of fulfilling a different kind of role in battle. Or even to the point where everyone has a gun, but certain, like, you have more position positions, more, and each position has a set number of, like a tree that they can go up of experience. And when you've capped out that position, that MOS, so to speak, in the military, then you can step up to the next rank, and now you've got new duties and new abilities and new weapons you can use and things you can unlock.
You said duty.
I did. It just adds some depth, and I always thought that'd be kind of interesting to have the option of going up in rank and it not just being something on your stats, but also it opens up a new skill tree, it opens up new abilities, it gives you the ability to issue orders to other players, you know, things like that. I think that would add depth. Again, any kind of those combat games, the online is always going to be limited to a certain point. You know, I was upset for the same reason with Battlefront that I was with Rainbow Six. There was no campaign,
yeah.
You know, of any kind. I love campaigns, but if you're going to be doing multiplayer, you got to give somebody better incentives than, oh, I can get up to this rank gun. You know, otherwise you're playing on the same 6 or 8 maps, doing the same thing. And if it doesn't continue to evolve, and Battlefield's not a technical game like that. It's not like Modern Warfare where they evolve into, it's all about headshots and 360 no-scopes. Battlefront was trying, or the Battlefield game, try to be a little bit more cinematic with it, a little bit more adventurous with it, and I think that's one of the reasons why I've stuck with that more than Modern Warfare. You know, like, I loved almost all of DICE's outings, even if they were glitchy, because they attempted to do something that Modern Warfare wasn't, and that was pay more attention to the player.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so getting back to the main topic, because we like to go on.
Yeah, that's a little bit. Sorry about that.
Little tirades here. That's fine. We're gonna get back to, okay, so now we have also the Last Jedi trailer that was also released, showing basically a bit of what's going on with the next movie that they will be releasing. Okay, so thoughts on this now, from what I have heard and saw. Supposedly, now it is. I'm trying to think. Have you seen this trailer?
Yeah.
Yeah. No.
I was one of the few people that wasn't a huge fan of the last one, man.
The Force Awakens.
So, I'm a diehard Star Wars fan. I adored the expanded universe. When they flushed everything I'd spent years reading and waiting to see in theaters, and then they came out with a movie and called it Star Wars and followed the same exact story beats that they follow in things like Frozen, that got in my craw a little bit. Like, parts of it I really enjoyed. And then parts of it, I don't know, man. I thought J.J. I'm the dissent. I'm like the four, you know, the one percenter here. I enjoyed the movie for what it was, but it was not the Star Wars movie I was expecting. And I went in expecting the worst. So it's not like I could go in and be just expecting it to be garbage. That way I could be all excited because it was awesome, and it just wasn't. And I think too many people were just wanting it to not be the prequels, that they weren't expecting it to be I don't know, man. It's a discussion for another time. The point is the trailer looked very polished. It looked very good. And it seems to me like they're bringing in, because Disney's kind of grabbing little microscopic pieces of the expanded universe, the parts they want to use. And you see little pieces of them sprinkled in, not to the point where it's even remotely paying homage to what they're stealing from, but it seems to me like they're drawing in some of the later Skywalker storyline where Luke tries to step away from the Jedi, and he sees himself as being cursed, and he sees the Jedi line as being specifically the Skywalker line as being cursed, and he feels if the Jedi were to just step away, maybe the world would be a better place. It seemed like they're kind of going in that direction, which might explain why Luke ran and hid on an island in the ass end of fucking space. I mean, they're gearing it up to give it to Finn. Oh God, and Rey, and what's his name, the X-wing pilot.
I like
kind of start new adventures.
I could hear you die a little on the inside in your voice there.
I hate Finn so much. You don't even understand how much I hate Finn. I hate that character. About that character, just makes my skin crawl. Damn. And the fucked up thing is I love the actor, dude. I love him. I love him and everything I've seen him in. And then I saw that movie, and the character of Finn just made me want to punch George Lucas in the face for selling it. I thought that them selling it to Disney would be like, hey, Disney desperately wants to make money, so Disney's going to give the crowd what they want. But they didn't do what I thought they were going to do. And I thought J.J. Abrams is the perfect guy to do it, and he very much was not. It just makes me sad. Again, I'm the minority. I know any of this. You love the movie. I know it was awesome and perfect in every way, and I'm not arguing that point. My personal feelings is that movie was a shadow. I'm not surprised they killed Han Solo. Harrison Ford's been trying to kill him since the second movie. None of that really. The whole rehash of the first plot line was just lazy.
Yeah, I've heard that before. That other people said that
it doesn't followed, even bother me though.
Yeah, it followed the same rehash, beats of like
New Hope and stuff like that. Absolutely did. Yeah.
All right. Well, yeah. Again, we are all allowed our opinions, yeah, and we are allowed absolutely to voice our opinions.
The movie looks good. I like the trailer.
Yeah, the trailer was really nice. It was very well shot and directed. I liked the way, but I felt the same way for Force Awakens. They're very good at building hype. That's one thing for sure, and I'm pretty sure that has excelled. Yeah. In the community in general, I'm sure people are excited to go see it.
I think it all comes down to Luke with the new movie, to be honest. The way that they've taken this story is the direction they're taking it in, Luke is the linchpin in the next movie. Rey's obviously the hero, you know, the heroine, and then Finn and
what's his name? What do you think about the poster that they did? It looks pretty cool the way I saw it. I like the idea of the way they styled the lightsabers so that it looks like it's moving. So there's like it seems like the theme of the movie, again, this is all speculation, but a theme of the movie might be maybe that boundary in between the good and evil of the universe, and maybe seeing that The Last Jedi might refer also to maybe the fact that as Rey is being trained, if she will stay a Jedi or maybe move over, we never know. That might be interesting to see. I don't know. They had some shots of, with like Mark Hamill there, and he was like, they had like the burning temple, and I'm assuming that's the Jedi temple that was attacked by Kylo and his squad of people. And I don't know. It looks interesting. It probably won't be like day one going to see it, because I'd probably be busy. But I'm definitely going to try and see it in theaters. I'm sure my father will be on top of that as well. And it's definitely, the hype is real. And it's nice to see the hype. It's nice to see, even if maybe we all as a group or part of this fandom don't share the same ideas, it is cool to see all of the commotion around the name in general. It's awesome to see these people talking about it. It's awesome to hear people talking about it. And it's just an exciting time for the fandom in general, and to see where we're going forward, especially for both the video game players and just the moviegoers.
Any of the expanded universe?
One more time.
Have you experienced any of the expanded universe?
I have not. I have not read anything from Star Wars. Again, I'm probably, I'm more on the cusp of being, in all honesty, a bandwagoner. I've seen the original movies. That's about it when it comes to it. I have not seeked out the other content that was being created for it. I played the games, obviously.
Which is why I think it's interesting. Oh, I think we're cutting in and out. I'm sorry. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can. You're good.
They toyed around with the principle in the near the end of the expanded universe when it kind of petered out and took a break for a while because they had this one storyline that was just bananas, where the force, there was a philosophy in the books where the force was moving towards an element of neutrality, where somebody had come up with an idea that you could have both light side and dark side in one person, right? You could have a more normal kind of hero Jedi, like instead of being having to
Aren't
strip so much out of
they
yourself and stick
referred
to the
to as
light.
the white Jedis or something like that? From what I've heard.
I don't remember. It's like a gray thing.
Oh, maybe it is gray. I think you're right, it's gray.
Yeah, they were toying around with this concept, and they had one Jedi that was neutral. He drew from both the dark side and the light side, but the dark side didn't corrupt him and twist him like you saw happen to all the other dark side users physically and mentally and so on. They didn't really go too far into it. They didn't have a chance to, and they kind of veered away from it because it was just a little too fuzzy, and I think the way those authors were handling it was questionable. But I think Disney might take that. That's what I think is the potential here. And that's why I thought this was worth mentioning, is what if Rey isn't a Jedi? What if Rey, what if Luke, legit in Disney's universe, is the last Jedi and Rey is a new thing, a new concept? Because Rey's tortured and she's angry. And she's not, she didn't start off, I mean, granted, Luke was a whiny hissy pants, but Rey started off very differently in a sense than Luke did. I mean, granted, the movies kind of tried to paint it differently, but I think her texture is different. She was never naive. She never had dreams of being a hero and all these cowboy fantasies. She was not one of those people. She was the spit upon, the tread upon, the tossed aside, the forgotten. And so when she launches off into this universe, she has nothing to lose. You know, Luke lost all his shit in front of him and then became, you know, we went through that tragedy with his aunt and uncle toasty chicken right in front of his house. That's terrible. But she's been living with an ugly reality as long as she can remember,
Yeah.
right? For him, it was a far off, it was a war story. So her texture is very different. And I think she is primed, and this is food for thought, but I think she's primed to not be a Jedi, but to be a Force user who draws from all parts of the Force, but does it without evil intent. You know, like she can draw from the evil side of the Force, from the destructive side of the Force, from the light side of the Force, but she does it from a neutral standpoint. I think that's a possibility. I think she could be that, and that's kind of what has me intrigued about the whole thing. Despite my feelings that the last movie wasted a good chunk of my time and was a big disappointment, I think that that's a good potential because I think Luke is the last Jedi, and I think Rey is something entirely new, and
And sounds
that's why
interesting.
I'm excited.
Yeah. Again, always, I do appreciate the food for thought, and it is interesting, and we'll definitely be looking to see where it goes. I'm going to be trying to avoid as much as I can in the way of trailers, because especially the way trailers are today, they do have a habit of spoiling more than you want to see when you watch the trailer, and I hate that shit. It happens all the time. So I'm going to try and stay away from the trailers until we get closer to the day, and then I'm excited to see it too. We'll see what goes on.
We're
So
talking to you, Terminator Genesis.
yeah, or Batman versus Superman, one of the show. Oh, let's show the entire movie in a compressed form as our trailer. Whose idea was that? How'd that shit get through? How did we
You'll be
have a
doomsday.
bunch of grown gentlemen that get paid to do things for a living sit down around a table that make decisions for a living and thought that let's spoil the entire movie in one trailer? And everyone just clapped their hands, and that man was given a raise or some stupid shit like that. I can't
Well,
imagine
look at it
that.
like this. The trailer was better than the movie.
We'll we'll divulge from that, because that also is another topic for another time, the hate on Batman vs. Superman. So let's go ahead, and I want to spend some time on this. We got about half an hour. I want to spend some time on this other topic that you put in the show notes that we got. And this is we're going to about go weeb on you all, and we're going to do some discussions about. So we have discussions involving the recent Ghost in the Shell film and also the new live action Death Note. And so we're going to talk about basically kind of the controversy that's been revolving these two and the things coming from the anime community in general. And we'll just express our opinions on that. So now I'm going to start with just talking about Ghost in the Shell. I did go see it in theaters recently, a little bit late, but from what I saw, I enjoyed it. Now, if you are on the fence about seeing the movie and you have not recently seen the property before Ghost in the Shell, like the original, I think it was 80s film that came out, I do recommend the film. It was good, I'd say. It was probably one of our best Hollywood anime adaptations. Now, that is starting the bar very low, I realize that, but I definitely recommend it. Even if you're just a sci-fi fan and you like the idea of maybe a slightly post-modernism kind of viewpoint, I definitely recommend it. It was a good film.
It was 95, by the way.
95. Yeah. I don't know why I thought 80s. But I
in this sense was like a good almost yeah, 5 years later, I think.
I think as a complete experience, it does a good job getting the story across. Because a lot of the Ghost in the Shell franchise has kind of been expanded over the course of years with the recent things they did with Arise and the other Ghost in the Shell properties they released.
Standalone
so. Complex. But before I went to go see it in theaters, I did watch the original Ghost in the Shell. So as I watched, I saw some comparisons. And talking about the film in general.
Did you watch the 1.5 or the original?
The original, first one.
Okay, so it didn't have the digital stuff in it.
No.
Okay.
And talking about the film in general, it did have some issues, I'd say. The biggest problem I had, it was a very pretty movie. There was a lot of special effects. The way they built this, like, Neo-Tokyo, although it wasn't, I don't even think it was filmed in Tokyo. I think it was filmed in China. But this, like, Neo-Tokyo-style thing they built was really cool. It's cool to see the Major again. I think the actor that played Bato, I do not know his name, but he did an excellent job as Bato. He's my favorite character the entire time. The film, again, as just a sci-fi experience, I think it was a good film to see, even if you haven't seen Ghost in the Shell prior. It does explain it. You do not need to see the previous to understand it. But I want to keep in mind that this is an adaptation. And a lot of one of the things in our notes is that we've been talking about is the whole topic of whitewashing and the issues that have come across, especially the controversy surrounding it before it was released with some of the trailers that they showed and some people talking about the Geisha girls. Is that what it is? Geisha? Those girls. Basically, they're like Japanese whores that walk the streets. Geisha. And some of the...
They're not whores.
Are they not whores?
Not really, no.
What are they?
Something different. That's a whole other conversation. And put it lightly, it was extremely anything sexual with a client. They were educated. They were entertainers. So they would get together with people.
So like a prostitute, maybe? Something higher end than a whore? For them.
And very rarely they would sell their virginity.
Oh.
To an honor thing. But it was very rare for them to do anything after that. Oftentimes, that was the only time they would engage in sex.
Huh.
There's a lot more to it. Some of them were whores, but for the most part, it's an entirely different kind of thing. Like, I wouldn't use the word prostitute and geisha in the same sentence ever. That's not an admiration for the trade, but I will say this much, they were the most powerful women in the country.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I appreciate that for the help, because I couldn't even pronounce the damn word correctly, so I'm glad we have some.
Geisha.
So again, going with that, Now, the whitewashing, I think, in the movie is addressed. I'm not going to say anything more than that. We're going to keep this spoiler-free. It is addressed why
sort of
the major isn't a Japanese woman. Now, the thing that the biggest problem that I come across with this whole topic, especially in this sense, is that the fact that the original creator, I do not know the name, but the original creator of Ghost in the Shell does not see the major as a Japanese woman. He views her as an android. Now, obviously, she is an android, but the thing with it is, how do I mute Discord, like, for other chats? Because this shit blasted my PC. There we go. All right.
She's like 90-something percent synthetic at this point in time.
Yeah, it's just her brain.
The only thing that's still human, entirely human, is her brain. And she's got a thin layer of skin of sorts.
Damn, dude.
But as far as I'm concerned, she's still human.
Yeah.
Anyway, you know what I think about it. And believe me, I came at it harsh at first until I did some really deep thinking and I actually went back and looked at legit examples of whitewashing. And then I looked at Death Note and I compared the two side by side and then I thought about it some. So I think I've got it pegged.
Yeah, again, like I said, they do address it. So it's just the whole topic. It's weird because I consider these adaptations, right? So it is a media that is being produced for the consumption of Americans. So I have no problem with the actors portrayed being American. I could understand the fact that it'd be better to get like Japanese people to give them a chance in like the Hollywood agencies, but it's just, I don't know. It feels almost like pretentious. It comes across that way to me. I don't know why. Like if we're getting more content that are adaptations of anime or things like that in general, why are you mad? I'm not trying to come off as aggressive, but why would you be mad if we're getting more content? If these things, like, I can understand why they had Scarlett Johansson as the lead. They're trying to sell this movie to people who don't know what Ghost in the Shell is. And if they have a high quality actor helming off and like basically the face of the movie, they might get people coming in that have no idea or do not give a shit what Ghost in the Shell is, but just like Scarlett Johansson or like the sci-fi aspect. And I have no problem with that because I feel the better these movies do, the higher the door opens for more chances for more properties like this to come out. Like,
I agree.
What we've had has been Dragon Ball Z and Avatar, and
Avatar isn't technically an anime.
Well, yeah, but, yeah, you know what I'm saying. It hurts, like, how bad these movies are, and especially from coming from such beloved series, it just tears away at you thinking about it. And so,
the comical part, up until I actually went and watched the series, and then I understood the pain.
Yeah, definitely. It
was so bad.
We're not going to talk about that again.
No.
we could stay here for the next 3 hours talking about it.
The tears.
Yeah.
I think with cultural appropriation, when you're stealing someone else's culture for your own amusement, or with whitewashing, that's a very clear line that I don't think people understand. You get a lot of SJWs out there right now that just want a reason to be upset.
Yeah.
You know, they're running around with a dry erase board for a sign and a marker, and they're scribbling causes on the sign to rage about until they find a new cause, and they erase that one off, and they put a new cause on there. When I was in high school, we called them the cause heads, and they stirred up a shit ton load of trouble for people that never asked for it. And there's a very clear difference between standing against something that is wrong and just yelling to make noise.
Yeah,
and with whitewashing, if you look back at older films like The King and I, or and no, you can't use Cleopatra as an example because Cleopatra was a woman from Rome, no less, so she was white. But if you take like the old cowboy movies where all the Indians were played by white dudes with face paint, or you take The King and I, which had the King of Siam played by Yul Brynner, but the whitest motherfucker you can get with, like, special makeup on chink his eyes. Or you take Charlie Chan, who was played by one of the greatest special effects artists of the golden age of cinema, black and white. But Charlie Chan was a white guy playing a pudgy middle-aged Chinese dude, and this was whitewashing. This was not adopting or adapting a property. It was cultural appropriation, and it was whitewashing. They had Chinese-American actors. They just didn't want them in the movie. And Chinese actors didn't sell, and it was a very racist society. So they never hired anyone like that for movies because Hollywood didn't want them in their movies. The closest you got was, what, Hop Sing? You know, and Bonanza, I think. It's very different when you are adapting a property that has been done. To take two vastly different examples, you take The King and I, where they have Yul Brynner, this white guy, playing the King of Siam in this classic musical, this thing that everybody loves. It's right up there with The Sound of Music and Mary Poppins. So you've got The King and I on one hand. Here's Yul Brynner playing a Siam. Then you've got Scarlett Johansson playing Motoko Kusanagi, who has the body of a Japanese woman, or at least visually the body of a Japanese woman, the name of a Japanese woman. Taking a property, you can change the ethnicities as long as that ethnicity has no bearing on the character. Kusanagi's ethnicity had nothing to do with her in any format ever. In Death Note, they have done an anime. They have done a TV series, both in Japan. They've done a movie in Japan, all in Japanese with Japanese actors. So my question is it for those of you who are raging about the, quote, whitewashing of Death Note? And again, I apologize if I'm going over long here, Kyle.
No, it's not a big deal, you beautiful bastard.
Right, cool. So, all right, so it's not true to the series. So, well, why not shoot it in Japan then? Okay, let's go and spend the extra money to shoot it in Japan. Well, fuck, we're in Japan. Why not get Japanese actors? Great, let's get Japanese actors. All right, well, you know, it's still not true enough because these guys are speaking English. So let's get them to go ahead and speak in Japanese. No, you've got the fucking TV series they made a year ago.
Yeah.
So it just doesn't make sense. You're trying to open it to a new audience. It's common to take a movie that's in French and remake it in English. Take a movie that's in Russian and remake it in English. People do it all the time with American actors. But the moment we do it from a country with a skin tone or a hairstyle or an eye color or something that's vastly different than ours, the SJWs rage out. But if you really think about it, this is not whitewashing. Because they're not intentionally ignoring a character's race and they're not taking Tiger Lily and making her a white girl. All right? Tiger Lily's clearly Native American, needs to have a Native American actress. If you were to rewrite Peter Pan and have Tiger Lily be a Swedish girl with pigtails, it would make sense. But if you're going to have her be Tiger Lily and she's supposed to be a Native American princess in Peter Pan land, she needs to be a Native American, not what's her face from the girl with the dragon tattoo. That, I understand, that is whitewashing. Whether it was intentional or not is another thing entirely. That's whitewashing. But what they do with Ghost in the Shell is not whitewashing. They're adapting a story, which means they are fully within their right to try and make it more approachable to a Western audience, which means it's not going to be in Japanese because that's fucking ludicrous. You're not going to have all Japanese actors because that's fucking ludicrous. And with Death Note, it's going to be a white, black, Chinese, American cast. I don't remember who they cast.
I don't know either. I haven't even seen the trailer for Death Note. I've heard about it.
Yeah, but the point is it's set in America.
Yeah, it is.
It's a version of Death Note. It's intentionally so. It does not make sense to do it in Japanese with Japanese actors. This is not whitewashing, and it's not cultural appropriation. It's adapting, and that should be done this way because, number one, it opens up the audience. Number two, it makes more fiscal sense because it's a fuckload of money to shoot something in another country. And then to have to go through and cast those actors and hope that you're not going to be able to sell a movie full of Japanese actors to a mass, wide-scale American audience. It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen with any country, period. But if it's the King and I, if it's Peter Pan, where they're taking somebody who clearly there were other options for the role, but they intentionally shot someone that was more palatable simply because they didn't want somebody of a specific ethnicity, that I understand. That is whitewashing. When you intentionally change a character's ethnicity, that is whitewashing. That, you know, cultural appropriation and whitewashing, those are very bad things. Those are negative things in Hollywood, and it's something that Hollywood has been under constant watch for. But people throw the term whitewashing around left and right just because they can, and it's not accurate. It simply isn't. Am I thrilled it was Johansson? No, I don't really care for her. She's beautiful, but she can't. She's really not the greatest actress for a lot of stuff.
It's good in this because she didn't have to act because she's a cyborg. So she just kind of does what she does. And it worked pretty well.
Matsuko is not the most emotional woman. As a matter of fact, she'd just as soon kill you as look at you if you happen to be on the wrong side. But I want to see it. I really do want to see it. And I am excited to see it. I'm hoping to go see it tomorrow. The Death Note thing, I've watched Death Note and read Death Note till I'm blue in the face. So I probably won't watch the American version. But there's nothing wrong with it. That's just... The weebs raging out for whatever reason. I don't even understand it. Yeah, I think it's silly.
I never understood it either, because I always thought of it as a good thing to have more, because you get a more of a the word escapes me, but the more you have of a certain property, it has more of a, well, I'm just going to say it, effect. So if we're making more money for this, that
easy to approach.
Hollywood looks at this and says, hey, I can make money off of this. People are paying to see this. Let's make more of this. And if you're one of those people that are not going because you have something that might have ticked you off, I'd just say give it a chance. I mean, I can understand that tickets get expensive, but ultimately you're supporting not necessarily the anime industry, but the idea of more anime adaptations. And I'd be excited to see more stuff like that, because this genre of entertainment, or a medium of entertainment, I could say, has some of the most interesting storytelling I've ever seen, and also some of the most garbagey garbage I've ever seen as well. It all depends on what season you're talking about. But
Japan puts a lot of their Hollywood-esque budget into anime, whereas we don't put that kind of budget into our animation typically.
Yeah.
So they get much more panache into their material than we do.
Okay. What time is it? We've been going for an hour and 45 minutes. I'm going to go ahead and we're going to call that a night. Thank you for joining me, Sean, and your beautiful self and your beautiful mind. And for all of you out there listening, this is our debut episode, episode one of whatever the hell we're going to name this podcast. We are still working on a title. So if you guys liked us, I'm going to leave information in the description. We'll probably have a title by the time the first episode goes up. If you guys want to follow us on social media, again, all the information will be in the description. We are going to be working on getting this stuff on iTunes and Google Play so you guys can listen to it without having to be on YouTube. You all have a wonderful day. And this was, again, the debut episode of whatever the hell we're going to name this podcast.
Snoochie Boochies.